Welcome to the BCMA Podcast. To celebrate International Museum Week, we're exploring the theme of technology, specifically how museums can work with LAM partners to preserve more of our increasingly digital society. Today, I'm joined by Corey Davis. Corey is the Digital Preservation Librarian at the University of Victoria and Visiting Program Officer at the Canadian Association of Research Libraries, or CARL. He's been working in academic libraries for 15 years, most recently as Digital Preservation Coordinator for the Council of Prairie and Pacific University Libraries. He is active in several national preservation efforts in Canada, including as a founding member of CARL's Digital Preservation Working Group, and as a founder and chair of the Canadian Web Archiving Coalition. If you'd like to join us as a future podcast guest, email us at bcma@museumsasn.bc.ca. So, Corey, thanks for joining us today on the BCMA podcast to chat about all things digital preservation and web archiving.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Ryan.
So one of the things that we've been working on in with the BCMA is to increase our collaboration with our partners in the GLAM sector, the galleries, libraries, archives, and museums. As someone who's coming from an academic library background, what are some ways you think that we could collaborate and things that we could be doing better to collaborate?
Up at the University of Victoria Libraries, our university librarian, a fellow by the name of Jonathan Bingston, is very interested in these types of collaborations. And I think, you know, from my perspective, I'm more on the systems side of things. I think there's a lot of infrastructure that support our collections that could be shared. And I know one of the things that really interests me is web archiving, and we can talk more specifically about that, but it's something that not a lot of museums are doing, but it's an activity that's critically important these days in terms of institutions being able to capture and reflect the stuff that's going on within their communities. And so we've had conversations with the public library about potential collaborative projects around web archiving. And I think it would also benefit the GLAM sector if museums and libraries that were active in this area were to have some conversations just about potential collaboration points. We also do a lot of online exhibits of our special collections and archival collections. And we use, obviously, software and different platforms, and storage and all that stuff is something I think that we share in common in many ways. So I think there's a lot of potential around shared services, infrastructure, technology, that area.
You know, I've realized I've probably put the car before the horse to some degree. So I'm just going to back up a little bit. So you're a digital preservation librarian. Tell me, what is that?
That's a really great question. It's one that I ask myself every day because we kind of make it up as we go along. But I guess, you know, at the end of the day, it's about ensuring that the stuff that we're producing now in digital format is around in 50 years and 100 years in the way that, you know, in the analog book and journal days when we were primarily reliant on print. We built these big buildings and, you know, made sure that the lights were on and the heating was there. And we had all these sort of complex systems to organize books and journals and keep them on the shelves and purchase them and describe them. And now that we've moved to a digital environment, there are so many challenges associated with ensuring that information in digital information in a generation from now or in two generations from now is actually accessible to people. You know, a PDF is not like a book where a human can just sort of pick it up after 100 years and read it. There's all sorts of software and hardware dependencies. There's you know, something called bit rot. And it's also really easy to erase something like that. And digital information is much more abundant, but it's also much more significantly more ephemeral. And so those are some of the big issues that we tackle. A lot of the conversations we have is just about, you know, what do we need to be focusing on when there's so much information out there? Who's going to do the work and who's going to pay for the underlying infrastructure that supports that? So, for example, storage, you know, that's something that we have to pay for over time. And how do we do that? So there's sort of these larger sort of grand societal issues around access to information over time, but then there's also kind of the nitty-gritty about building systems and workflows and tools to ensure that we are able to do that as an organization up at UVic.
And our members, being museums, galleries, heritage sites, preservation is such a big part of what they do day in and day out, but I think not a lot of us think about the preservation of our digital footprints and the digital content that we produce on a, you know, I was going to say daily, but it's probably more like a minute by minute basis these days. So what are some things that you think our members should be more aware of when it comes to digital preservation?
That's an interesting question because there's sort of two parts. There's the, there are museums as organizations themselves. And as you mentioned, you know, as an organization, it's really important to be able to tell your own story over time. And so things like records management can be something that can be important. But, I wouldn't want to presume that people aren't aware of certain issues. You know, I would only make an observation. I was sort of poking around the Royal BC Museum website. My daughter's humming in the background. Just a second. This is a good artifact of the pandemic. You know, we're having two grown-ups having a conversation with the children scurrying around because all the schools are closed, but the Royal BC Museum has a website, like a lot of museums, that where they're trying to now that they're closed because of the COVID-19 pandemic, trying to still give the public a point of contact with digital collections and websites and things like that. And they had a really neat website where they talked about 100 interesting objects or something. And I was kind of looking at it, and a lot of stuff is very artifactual, you know, but there's a lot of stuff in there. There's photographs, there's sound recordings and letters and journals. And I was sort of thinking, you know, in 100 years and 150 years, a lot of those things now, they're all digital. And they're not only digital, but they're often in the cloud. They're often through a commercial service like Apple or Google that sit behind a password in someone's personal account. And so for me, the really interesting thing for museums is they're so connected with their local community, and that community is really telling its own story. You know, as if you look at the example of COVID-19, it's really telling its own story through the web, through social media, through municipal websites, through blog posts, through YouTube. And when people want to understand how their community responded to this pandemic in 50 or 100 years, how are community museums and libraries and archives going to be able to tell that story in a meaningful way? What do we need to be doing now in terms of ensuring that we're capturing those voices? And then once we've sort of captured that stuff in digital form, how do we ensure that it's actually, you know, accessible over time? And those are the things that I think really interest me, and where I think that museums, especially local community museums, have a really important part to play in what's unfolding right now.
Yeah, and I've really enjoyed, as the COVID-19 pandemic has become a bigger part of our lives, seeing the exhibits that regional museums and local museums have put together, talking about what communities did during the Spanish influenza pandemic in the late 1910s, and looking at really how little we have, as people, have changed in how we approach these kinds of things. If I were a local museum now in 2020 wanting to document some of the things that I see going on in my community, what would be some steps I could take to ensure that A, we're documenting things that our community is putting out there, and B, that what we document and preserve digitally will be useful and applicable for the future?
It can be really intimidating and feel a little bit overwhelmed to start with that. A lot of libraries and archives at universities are approaching this in a number of different ways. And I think one of the most basic and simple ways is recording oral histories and ensuring that those are kept accessible. So it could be, you know, it could be as easy as a local museum asking people to contribute their stories, to tell their stories, to use a cell phone to record a video and to upload it to, you know, a YouTube channel that's specific to that museum or that organization. Could be as simple as that. And then you can kind of worry about the preservation of that content later on. I think the really important thing now is for museums to think about, and for libraries and archives as well, to think about what are the voices in my community that we could capture in a way that, you know, that's realistic and doable and achievable. And because most people do have cell phones and most people have access to the internet, I think things like oral histories are going to be a really important thing. You know, for us, we're also looking at, you know, it's really interesting that you should mention the pandemic, the Spanish influenza pandemic from 1918-1919 and the collections around that. From a librarian's perspective, I've been reading a number of books that were written about that event. And when you look at the foreword and the authors, you know, thanking all of these librarians and archivists and curators that helped them source everything out. And you look at all the primary sources, and it's really quite frightening when you think in the future, like all that stuff now, from, you know, research data sets that governments are producing to, you know, the commercials that are on the internet now with, you know, Dr. Tam at the national level talking to us about what we need to be doing, about, you know, John Horgan's Twitter feed and all these sort of original primary sources, the things that are happening right now. It's, you know, I worry that we're going to be able to tell a meaningful story in the future. So I think with, you know, for us at the library, we have certain tools that we can deploy to help us tell those stories. And one of them is web archiving. So we're able to capture websites of, you know, local newspapers, of social media feeds and things like that. For a museum that might not have access to that type of thing, I think things like photographs, having people send in their photographs of things that are meaningful to them about the COVID-19 pandemic in their community, recording using cell phones, things like that might be a way to approach it. And I wouldn't want to assume, you know, that I'm an expert in museum curatorial practice, but I think that might be a really pragmatic, easy way to start.
And I think a lot of museums are fairly comfortable with the idea of doing oral histories and even shooting videos on site. But I think what a lot of sites might not be as familiar with is ways for documenting the digital side of things, because so much of our lives now is lived on social media. Are there any steps you would recommend if sites wanted to try to document some of the things that are happening online?
Really depends. If you've got sort of a geek in the closet somewhere that's really good with computers and can spin up a virtual machine and the, you know, in Amazon or something like that, there are all sorts of open source online tools that basically you can use to capture things like Twitter feeds or Facebook pages and then be able to play those back later. And it can be quite, you know, kind of complicated, but if you have someone with that sort of those kinds of inclinations in your community, that can be valuable too. There are also, there's an organization called the Internet Archive, which is a really neat organization out of San Francisco that basically focuses on archiving the web. And they have a tool that they call the Wayback Machine. And if you haven't seen it before, it's a pretty cool thing. I imagine a number of people will be familiar with it, but you can actually go to the Wayback Machine now and submit a URL and they'll save it. And then you can keep track of that. And maybe on your website, you can link to some of those captures. So you won't, you know, so you can build smaller collections of web archiving using open source tools if you have that sort of technical capacity, but you can also use the Wayback Machine and point to URLs of, say, a community newspaper or a public Facebook page, or even the URL of a Twitter post, as an example. And at least capture a representative sample of some of those lived digital experiences. And I think if they're properly contextualized, that you don't need a lot to tell a really good story, potentially.
Yeah, I've definitely lost a few hours on the Wayback Machine at various points.
Just it's pretty exploring. Pretty fun.
See, it's easy to forget how different the web looked, because I personally, like, you see Facebook every day and you kind of think, oh, Facebook's always kind of looked the same. But then you go back a few years and you go, wow, like, this is a way different looking thing than I remember.
It's, and this is the thing about digital, is it's ever changing and it's just incremental. Every day, little bits of it change. And before you know it, you're in an entirely different sort of environment and experience. And you know, not to get too philosophical about it, but the mechanisms of Facebook will sort of limit people's ability to express themselves in different ways. And so I think for people in the future, it It's sort of like the newspapers from 1918. They're really interesting in terms of stories about theater owners wanting to open up again and things like that. But another really, really interesting part of it are the ads and how stories are placed on the page and things like that. So it's not, you know, when you're capturing Facebook, like you said, people that look back at that in 20 and 30 years, they're going to get a lot of meaning that we don't really see right now because it's right in our face. That's really going to help them understand the context within which these conversations were happening as well. So I think it's a really interesting observation just, you know, on that Facebook and just how it evolves over time.
Mm-hmm. And would you recommend that if you're a site that is interested in learning more about this, maybe implementing some digital preservation into their regular sites practice, would you suggest reaching out to your nearby universities?
I would absolutely suggest that. I think it's a really great idea. Obviously, there are a ton of resources online, and some of which are specifically designed for smaller organizations that may have limited resources around digital preservation. But yeah, I would absolutely recommend reaching out to a university that might be in your community, to the librarian or archivist there. And you know, we're a relatively small province. I don't mind if people contact me at the university and we can have a conversation about this stuff. We are having a similar conversation with the Point Ellis House here in Victoria, just about web archiving and online exhibits and digital preservation. And we're just going to kind of see where the conversation goes. And I think it's really important, even if we're not able to really help each other out specifically right away, having those conversations and building those relationships are going to put us in a better place the next time something like this happens and we want to work together across the GLAM sector to ensure that we're capturing our community's voice. You know, I think it's really important.
And with the recent closures, I'm sure the thoughts of moving things online and exploring best practices for digital and virtual exhibits is really high on everyone's mind in the sector. And having outside organizations and experts to talk to about that, I think is really helpful, as just having the ability to brainstorm with someone and learn about what's out there and just so you're not out there trying to reinvent the wheel by yourself.
And it's nice to it's nice to talk to people that are thinking along the same lines as you, especially when we're all in isolation. And it's I think it's pretty important.
I'm just trying to think, is there anything else that you wanted to cover in today's conversation?
One of the things that really interests me in terms of museums, because they're so artifactually based in many ways, is the idea of sort of digitizing three-dimensional objects. And that, you know, I'm not too sure, you know, in your experience, if you're finding that many museums, you know, apply for grants to do things like that in order to do online exhibits. I think what's going to happen after this pandemic is there's going to be, as you mentioned, like an increased appetite for that type, the ability basically to represent collections, artifactual collections in the virtual space. And I think as those conversations happen, you know, if your association and within communities, libraries, archives, and museums really need to talk to each other, because we do have a lot of the similar, even though our collections are very different, a lot of the infrastructure that's going to enable us to virtually present those are going to be they might be the same. And I think there's some points of contact there. So I think this is a really, you know, if there is a silver lining to this event, it's that it may bring us closer together as a GLAM sector.
And I think you bring up such a great point in that if we start having these conversations before we start project, we can both draw upon other people's experiences, but also ensure that in the world of data, we're using similar standards for our metadata and tagging, so that when we produce information, it's easily shareable and interoperable with things that people are doing, you know, down the road or on the other side of the planet, so that we're able to easily communicate with each other and preserve this for the long-term future.
You know, in my experience, which is, you know, limited in some ways, but I think when budgets are going to get tight for everyone, there's going to be some pain there for sure. And if we're looking especially for funding from governments or other agencies, often that collaborative aspect can make the project that we're trying to fund just that much more appealing to people that have the funds to support us. And so I think it's really critical that we're seen as working together as well in terms of moving forward in a really resource-constrained environment for the next little while here.
That's a great point. Yeah, I think both from the perspective of on the university side, that funders love to see that direct community connection. And then on the museum side, funders really like to see us working with partners that we might not normally collaborate with. So I think
yeah.
those kinds of agreements are reciprocal. Really, it's, you know, it's that whole rising tide that lifts all boats kind of thing, that you can only succeed by collaborating.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining us today, Corey. For a list of links and resources related to today's discussion, please visit our website, museumsasn.bc.ca.